At HSBC Private Banking, we know your journey as an entrepreneur will be as unique as the business you run. From growing your company to helping shape longer-term goals, our unrivaled team of experts is here to support you and your family every step of the way. In recent years, we have surveyed more than 10,000 entrepreneurs globally, gaining unparalleled insight into the concerns and ambitions of business owners and what makes them tick. At HSBC Private Bank, we're here to help you align your values with business ownership and to build your family's future. HSBC Private Bank, supporting entrepreneurial spirit.
I'm Matt Alagaya, and you're listening to a special episode of The Entrepreneurs, recorded in Paris in collaboration with HSBC Private Banking. Why Paris? Well, the French capital is one of the most exciting cities in the world right now for startups and innovation. Station F, the world's largest incubator and co-working space, was launched in the city last summer and has become a symbol of the new energy in this part of the French economy. Plus, as London stumbles in the run-up to Brexit, Paris has sniffed an opportunity to become the next European hub for entrepreneurial activity. We brought together an esteemed group of experts and entrepreneurs based in the city for a one-off roundtable. The topic of discussion was funding, what entrepreneurs should do to secure it, what investors are actually looking for, and how investment in young ventures is changing. Joining me in Paris were Antoine Basquiera, the co-founder and CEO of Early Metrics, a rating agency for startups and SMEs, Jade Francine, co-founder and COO of We Maintain, a startup in the elevator maintenance industry, and last but not least, Aurélien Drain, the head of business development for HSBC Private Banking. I started by asking Antoine what investors are generally looking for when it comes to startups.
On top of the metrics, when an investor is looking to a startup company, is not only how great is that company, but is the company liquid in the sense, will that company have further round of funding so that the money that I invest is going to worth more because the company is going to worth more, but I also have the opportunity to sell my share. So what they are looking for, it's a combination between a great company, but also a company that is going to have further round of funding in order to make sure that the money they invest will become liquid further down the line.
Interesting. And are there any other kind of key things that they look for when they come to you and say, look, we're looking at this startup, but we need a rating from you?
So I would say that on top of these two pillars, liquidity and a great startup, when we look into a great startup, I think that at the stage they invest in, the most important pillar relies in the team. Usually on these young companies, the most important assets are the men and the women that are starting the project. So most of all, business angel, or when they invest in the early days of the company, they tend to have a strong focus on who the founders are, and not only on their hard skills, but also on their capacity to self-assess, capacity to pivot, to challenge themselves. So I would say a strong combination of soft skills rather than just the market expertise or the more hard skills that they could have.
Aurélien, in your role at HSBC Private Banking, you obviously meet a lot of young entrepreneurs. Generally speaking, is securing funding high on their list of priorities? I mean, is it something that they're constantly thinking about, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. Funding is critical for a startup business because by definition, they start from scratch and they create a very new and disruptive business model. And it's very important for them to be able to fund their vision and to make this vision into reality. So it's about funding, about the new technology, is about how you will fund the way you will distribute your products and your services. So you have to open new channels for distributions, and also about the regulation, how to deal with the regulation. So for all of these things, you need to hire people. So it's very important to be able to fund. So it's critical for startups.
Jade, you've been nodding your head enthusiastically throughout those two answers. What about what Aurélien and Antoine, what they've said has kind of caught your eye?
Yeah, so I fully agree that funding is critical when you're a startup, but actually when you have a good project, money is kind of a commodity and it's not that hard to find. So, and if you feel confident enough in your project, then of course you need to look for money, but also for people who are ready to invest in you. So I agree with you, it's about people, men and women. You need to find people having connection in your industry. Actually, some people are also part of the VC and the banking system, but a bit less in the business. For instance, I am in the real estate. I need people. It's a very small world and I need people who are already in that business.
This is why I think that we call it the research of smart money rather than the research that money, because at the very beginning, I agree with Jade, when you have a good project, when you start to have some traction, both public and private funding, they are accessible. I won't say that it's easy, but it's feasible to grasp that money. But grabbing smart money from the proper business angel that will open you the good doors or that will actually give you the right advice, this is what is the hardest. And too often we consider funding as a key sign of product market fit, which is not. The money, as said, as Aurélien said, is the fuel you need to grow, but it's not a proof of your growth per se. And smart money is harder to catch than just money.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. And it's also important to mention that some startups are able to generate turnover very quickly and to generate income. And we are very impressed by to see that and to see some company opening a really new market and they are able to get clients in early stage, early adopter very quickly, and they are able to generate cash flow very quickly.
And Aurélien, you work with a lot of next generation, sort of new gen startups and entrepreneurs. Are they doing things differently when it comes to funding? Are they looking in different places for funding than perhaps their forebears were? Or is it kind of the same old things are the truisms?
In our world, we meet many entrepreneurs who are looking for funding and who are also looking for connections, because it's not only about how to fund your business, it's also about how to develop, how to get good connection. And what we can say that we see two different population of entrepreneurs. We see the population of the self-starters, who are very fascinating because they often start really from scratch. They don't have necessary family background to help them to fund, or they don't have necessary connections, but they are able to build and to connect with the mentors, with venture capitalists, with also market leaders. So it's very impressive to see the ability to connect very quickly with the network. And on the other side, we have also the group of next-gen clients who are coming from family business with a very well-established family. And it's also nice to see how they are able to be creative and to develop new business. And they are also very motivated by social impact.
And when it comes to funding, presumably, if you come from a family business background, you're less inclined to need funding, unless you're compared to someone who, as you call them, a self-starter.
Yeah, absolutely. Clearly, the funding can be less an issue for them. We see that in other hand, they have also a lot of pressure from the family. So we can say sometimes we can notice that they are a bit more conventional. So, and self-starter are much more disruptive and they are much more creative for their business model. But it's not a general rule. It's just we can see a slightly difference between the two group of clients.
As we mentioned earlier, I think that if your family business, I don't know, made their fortune in retail and you are building a new startup, let's say in mobility, maybe that money, yes, of course, you will have access to the funding, but it's not going to give you that kind of business access or good level of mentoring. So what you might do, and we have seen many examples in rated companies, that the family business was funding part of the round. Let's say the company was in need of 5 million. Yes, they take 2 or 3 million from their family in order to kickstart the fundraise, but they still want to onboard 2 or 3 key individuals that could put, I don't know, 500K each, but that have more business expertise. So it's always that balance between just taking money, but also onboarding people that are more potential board member rather than just investors. And I agree with Aurélien, family businesses, the question is, do I join the family business or do I build my own? And it's true that it's not always that they move away from the family business, but we do have some examples. An entrepreneur in his soul went away and then 10, 15 years later comes back to the family business.
But what's also very challenging when you have people from the industry who invest in your company is that these people usually, it's men around 50 years old and they have all this connection and they do feel that they master the industry. They have everything. So you have kind of a conflict because you're coming and you, of course, you need this connection, but you're also trying to change the industry. So I had this situation once where we had a business angel family. Eventually, he did not join the company. But so he was very nice and always introducing people. But he also had this idea in mind, which is control. He wanted to control the company. And it's something maybe we don't tell to entrepreneurs, that when it's your own business, that's your startup. That's you. It's not people telling you what you have to do, like how to do it. And at the end, that's your own company and no one can control it, especially at the very beginning. And it's hard to make people understand that, especially when, you know, they're older and they know a lot of people in the industry. You have to explain that's a startup rule. That's a new market. That is not the old real estate industry. So sometimes you have some slight conflict. Not generation. It's more about the culture.
You're obviously in the property industry, and the property industry is one of the most closed and kind of slow moving, just because of the amount of capital that you need to get into the business. But, you know, we're now seeing prop tech becoming a thing, but it's taken a while to take off. And people like you are kind of disrupting what is a fairly traditional business.
It's like the utility market or the energy market. I think that the first step, it's what we call capital intense, meaning that it's not easy to pilot a real estate business. Or when you want to build a new kind of property, the first ticket that you need to put on the table, it's already in millions. So it's not a very, I would say, MVP, minimum viable product friendly, the same way industry is not. Even if more and more we tend to see a real estate or utility as only hardware businesses, you know, hardware and robotics, we're buying more and more, and I think that Jad will confirm, on the real estate business, there are a lot of value proposition that are actually in real estate, but not based on a piece of real estate, and more software-oriented value proposition. And in this specific case, this is how a very capital-intense market can still renew itself, maybe not from the hardware side, but more on the software side.
But then when you meet VC and they don't know this market, it's really hard to explain your value proposition. Also, I think B2B startup is more recent than B2C. So in France, especially Paris, a lot of people still think it's B2C. So some VC used to tell me like, oh, you need like to spend a lot on marketing. I'm like, no, because I'm selling elevator maintenance contracts. So I don't need like such a huge marketing cost. So that's why I think you need to have people related to your business somehow. But at the same time, they don't want to control your business. So that's actually very challenging when you want these two combinations.
And Jade, WeMaintain is obviously still a relatively young company, but you have raised funds. What parts of the industry did you go to for funding? And are there any tips, I guess, for entrepreneurs out there thinking of doing the same? Maybe they're in the same industry and thinking about getting funding in the next few months.
Basically, we started to meet a VC in Paris. And then we had this issue about business because they were not that related to business. Then we talked to Business Angel and they wanted to control the company. So that was quite challenging, actually. And then we thought about LPs because they are the one investing in the VCs. So we went and talked to the LPs. So usually it's a big family's office. And they were like, yeah, of course, we can invest directly in your company. So this is what we've done. It was quite interesting because it only took us actually a month to get everything closed. And you have people that have been in the business, so they know what it is. They know it's B2B. It takes time. They don't have pressure from other LPs or people because it's their own money. So that is what we've done. So what I would tell to entrepreneurs is that you need to get a lot of information, actually, who invests in who is funding who, how to talk to them, and just talk to them. You have LinkedIn. That's such a great tool. You can talk to anyone. You can ask questions. You can also see where people have already invested money. So you can talk to people having these people on the board and just have some feedback. Just you need to do a lot of background check, actually. Don't be afraid. It's not because people have money that they are the one deciding, actually.
And I think that the mapping, the initial mapping of who are my dreamed investor, okay, yes. It's the boss of JC Deco, it's the boss of any real estate company. You start by your list of dreamed investor because they would add value to your business. And then you try and contact them. And I think that Jade mentioned an interesting point is that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, investing in startups, it was for Silicon Valley-based cowboy. Oh, I'm investing in startups and so on. And more and more, it has, I won't say it didn't become normalized, but more and more kind of investors are actually interested in startups. I think that Jed Junge mentioned the example of family offices, so large wealthy family, that in the past, they were interested only in bonds, real estate, but more and more because of intellectual interest, because they want to have meaningful investment, they are looking into startups. And I'm going to quote one of them that told me once, you know, startup, they should go for family offices rather than VC, because the VC is here for 5 years, whereby the family is here for the eternity.
That's very new trends. I absolutely agree with you, Jad and Antoine. And we see from our client perspective, and because we are in touch with ultra high net worth and high net worth investors, and we can say today that they are very keen to invest in a startup business. And we have to keep in mind as well that they are looking for, they need to diversify their portfolio of investment. So anyway, we don't have to be to limit yourself too much about which sector are they interested in, and because anyway, they need to diversify. And that absolutely is true that the family office or individual investors don't look necessarily only on the return on investment. They also think in terms of social impact, social responsibility, and they want to make sure that the company which in they invest are fully aligned with their personal value and also about the personal philosophy, because some very ultra high net worth entrepreneurs are also keen to leave a mark on the society and to give back to their community of entrepreneurs.
It's almost a bit of a two-way street then, Aurelian. So, you know, the funding is going one way, but also knowledge about how startups work and that kind of new way of thinking goes the other way, right?
Yes, absolutely. And funding is important, but they are also very keen to create good connections and to get good synergy, synergize in terms of business opportunity, because an investor can be also a potential client for his company or previous company. You mentioned some examples, Antoine, and it's absolutely true. So in HSBC, we have as a client a very important client and very market leaders of some industries, and they are always keen to meet some young entrepreneurs with very new ideas, of refreshing business model, and to develop their business as well.
And I think that when a family is investing close to his historical activity, it's not so much for the 3 or the 5 million and the return investment. It's also a way to, it's a strategic investment to discover what their industry might become 5 to 10 years down the line. And they also have that very specific relation to time where they are not interested in the 3 or 5 year return. They are also interested in what do they leave to their own children in terms of the family business. Is it still a family business 100% old school? Or is it a family business that is still 90% of school, plus with some startup investment that are also contributing into this, in the disruption of that specific market? So I definitely think that family offices and ultra-high networks are going to play a part in the startup funding ecosystem more and more in the next few years. They just need to make sure that they use the right tools to do it, because it's still very new. These guys are used to invest in real estate or listed companies. So when it's come to explain them, as we do with Olimetrics, that no, they cannot use the same rate that they would use for bonds when it comes to rating startups. There is a bit of education and pedagogy, but as the next generation of successful entrepreneurs is coming, more guys in their 40s rather than guys in their 70s, they also have that kind of cultural change where they do grasp better the key success factors of startups.
And do you see some people making mistakes, jumping into startup world a bit too soon and investing in things and making those mistakes?
I think that we don't make the decision instead of them. And as any model, we've got fake positive and fake negative, even if the model is robust. I think that more than too soon is too big. So we have a client, a neutral network that comes and says, I want to invest in startups. Our best recommendation would be to, okay, decide how much you want to invest globally on the next 2 to 3 years. Let's say that that family office says, okay, 1 million. Then you split it into tickets. Okay, so it means that it will be 10 times 100,000 euros, and you stick to that. So you give yourself a rule and you stick to that. We have seen mistakes of family offices or ultra networks that were on the first investment, second investment, third investment, already making huge checks. And on that case, they might have lost it. So when it becomes too emotional, investing in a startup, it's still a bit of an emotional decision, but it needs to have a bit of rational. When you go too emotional, too big, the risk goes higher.
That's so true. I had this actually issue with this business angel, is that he put way too much money. He wanted to put way too much money on the company. And then we told him, like, maybe it's actually too much. And he was like, no, I believe that so much in the project that I want to put. He wanted to put actually 500K, and it's just one person. That was his own money. It was not family office. That was just his own money. That was a lot of money for him. And then, yeah, it just becomes irrational, because people need to keep in mind that you have a risk and you may just lose this money. So,
Aurélien, I wanted to come back to something that Jade mentioned earlier, which was that as an entrepreneur, you need to read around your sphere and do a bit of your homework. Is that something, I mean, you obviously speak with a lot of young entrepreneurs. Is that something that they know to do, to actually do their research, do their homework? And otherwise, it can be quite a daunting task, I guess.
Yeah, it's a difficult question because, of course, there is no one answer. There's no golden rules for raising fund or getting to investors, approaching investors. But what we can say, generally speaking, that it's important to develop your vision and to prove that also the timing is good for your business. So when you talk about timing, it's also it's about is the technology is ready is solid. It's very important. Is the market is ready as well? Make sure that the customers are ready to use your product or services, and also about the regulation, because regulation can have a huge impact on some business. Once you have developed your vision and convinced your audience, it's also important to prove your capacity to execute. Execution is absolutely key for a company, as you mentioned, Antoine, earlier. He has to be able to show that your team is behind you. And so don't forget to talk about your team. It's absolutely crucial because an investor believes on ideas, but invests in people. And it's very important to keep that in mind. And so be transparent, show the complementarity of your team as well, because it's very crucial to have different expertise, different nationality as well, because if you think to scale up your business at a global stage, at a global level, it's very important to have people from different country and nationality in your business. So team, I would say, your vision, your capacity to execute, the capacity of your team as well. And the business plan also is important, but don't be too worried about the figures, because any investors know that the figures are always wrong in terms of projection, especially for startups. So it's more important to focus on when could be the break-even point and when will be the perspective of cash flow. Right? That's the main important point.
Antoine, I want to jump in here about that, because there's lots to unpick there. Without giving away too many of your company's secrets, but are you looking at things like the team and whether the timing's right when you give a rating? And might you say to an investor, even, you know, coming back to timing, might you say to them, look, it's a great company, but now is not the right time. Maybe look in another year and a half.
We don't have that advice. So we don't give them advice to invest or when they should invest or not. What we do is rate the company as a company per se, and then they decide whether or not it's the great timing. But to come back on your question on the criteria, more than happy to give away the company secret, because traditional rating agency, they hide the rating criteria. Early Metrics, one of our innovation, is we give them away. We want everyone to know what we look at. So the three rating pillars of the model. So first one is the team, second one, project and technology, and the third one is ecosystem, a wider vision of the market. So we've got 27 rating criteria across these three pillars, and we look at each of them. And as Aurélien said, the team on early stage venture is the one with the highest coefficient behind it. And of course, execution. I think that funding, despite the fact that we said that funding is accessible, it has become a bit more competitive. Why? Because every guy out of a business school wants to fund a company and launch a startup. And so we have more and more early stage businesses that are asking for money to the same investor. So it's not like 10 years ago where they would invest just in an idea and a guy. I think that now they are more aware that you should prove some kind of execution capacities. Even if it's not about quantitative figures, you need to show qualitative proof of execution. So it might not be a number of clients, but it can be a conversion rate between prospect and client. So you see, it's not how big you are, but how smart you are in converting your first prospect into initial clients.
And Jade, I wanted to come back on something else that Aurélien mentioned, which is timing as an important kind of thing to look at. From an entrepreneur's perspective, what was the thing that told you, okay, yeah, now's the right time to look for funding? Was there clues, or was it just an obvious time in the business's sort of life to do it?
So there is actually one time you should not go for funding is a summer in France, definitely, because like till the end of September, like just forget it. And then for We Maintain, that was we had the team actually, and we wanted people to see the team. That was really important for us. Then we had some conversion, like first conversion. We had the technology. So that was like not one criteria, but a few criteria around. Then what else? And then also it's about yourself. Like, do you feel good to go and pitch people? Because you need to put a lot of timing and energy in that. You really need to spend time and to be convincing. if you feel sick, sad, fat, whatever, just don't go, seriously, don't do it, because you have people in front of you who will tell you, like, I disagree with you, I don't see the market like that, what about your figures, and they challenge you all the time, which is good, actually, because then you become, you improve, but sometimes it's also just tiring, actually, so you have to make sure you feel really good, actually, like, I'm going to conquer, I'm going to win.
I think that it's the good point is to mention there is the timing of the business that might be good or bad. Do I need that money to go to my next milestone? If I'm close to achieving a milestone, such as, I don't know, my first sale or my first new country or my first recruitment, if you are close to a milestone, don't raise money. You need to raise money just after having reached a milestone to go further down the other one. So that's the timing of the company. But then there is very much the timing of the founder, because there is still that connection, that bond between an entrepreneur and his company during the first 10 or 15 years. And if you don't feel that it's the right time to accelerate, because funding is not so much money on the bank account, it's new hire, new countries, new product, and so on. So we need to make that judgment between timing of the company and timing of the entrepreneur.
Yeah, it's important to be not shy in terms of what you expect in terms of funding and capital. So it's very important to ask enough money to develop your business, because all entrepreneurs know the death of valet. So there is always a period on the life of the company development where you need more cash, you need more money. So it's important to anticipate that and to manage carefully your cash, but to ask enough money from the beginning and to have also good people around you and experts to help you to anticipate that and to develop your cash flow and your capital needs.
Jade, did you have a mentor or someone who was advising you throughout the process of getting funding? Was that an important thing for you?
No, I did not have one. But actually, before we maintain, I was working in a law firm and I help entrepreneurs raising funds. So I had this first experience. So I knew a little bit how it could work with lawyers, with VCs. And I'm not sure, actually, I will suggest people to have mentors, because at the end, it's only yourself, actually, you selling your product, your company, your project. That's your vision, your ambition. And if you have people between you and the investors, that's not you, actually.
Most of all, I think for the early rounds, the need of an M&A boutique or the need of a formal advisor, it starts to be important a bit further down the line when you are raising 3 million, 5 million, 10 million. For the first rounds, the key decision maker of the investor is very much you rather than the company per se. So you can go direct by yourself. And if you go with an advisor to raise 500K or 1 million, it might seem a bit that you cannot do it by yourself. And raising this first, I would say, friend and family or seed round, it's what we consider as being part of your skills as an entrepreneur. Maybe later on to raise 5 million, it's another job. Let's onboard an M&A boutique, that's completely fine. But the first time that you are raising money, I would suggest you go by yourself because they invest in you rather than in the company. So any intermediary will give an image that maybe is not the right one.
It's also because, for instance, we raised 1.8 million as a seed round, and a lot of people told us that that's way too much. And they told me that's too much. You cannot raise that much money. I was like, yeah, maybe you cannot raise, but I can raise. So that's why I think the first and second round, it's only about yourself, actually.
Yes, and raising money from yourself is also a good indicator in terms of leadership and your capacity also to succeed. And it's also a way to prove how you are able to sell your business, how you are able to interact with investors. And it's very important things. And about the leadership, it's in HSBC, we have conducted a survey through more than 3,700 entrepreneurs worldwide. And we see that we can notice that the leadership skills is very the common determinator for all entrepreneurs. So it's absolutely critical because you have so many challenges to face on. So you have to have very strong energy, very strong leadership, and you have to be able to communicate very properly with investors, with regulator, with your clients, with your staff as well, because your staff might be often millennials, so it might be a different profile of employees. So I want to say interpersonal skills and leadership is very important to raise money as well.
And I'm guessing that investors as well, they want to see a bit of that drive, but potentially also if it is the first round, they may be willing to let it slide if you're not the polished, finished article, right?
Yeah, the fact that you have advisors, I think that we just said that going with advisor for the fundraise, it might not be a good idea. But actually having advisor, not for the fundraise, but just as a business, that's a key driver of trust. Because it's true that when you are like ourselves with Jade, under 30, founding our own company, the fact that you've got some gray hairs behind you, just on your deck, and just people that trusted you at the very beginning, it's also a key driver of success. It's always, you know, the investor, he or she judges your capacity to convince. So you have to convince him. And the more you can show him that you have convinced other guys, advisors, employees, first clients, it's all what he sees as being de-risking his investment. So that capacity to convince, you will use it for him, and you will see the previous guys that you have convinced as a good trust factor.
So Jay, just talk us through exactly how you chose the investors that you did end up choosing.
So basically, we chose people who share the same values as we have, and also the same ambition, I think is super important. So because we have a very strong international ambition that we maintain, and we wanted people to share the same vision. So that's something really important for startups, is that you also have to choose your investor, and you cannot take people, like all people coming with money. You choose people with the same values, the same visions, because at the end, it's only people. It's people you see every 6 weeks. You have to discuss with them. They know your team. They know your customers. So it's just about people, and you need to choose these people.
Yes, absolutely, because the feeling is very important on the relationship, because it's a long-term relationship with an investor. It's not just to raise money one shot. It's about reporting, offering transparency, having regular contact with them. You can be faced on some difficulties, or you have to have some problem to solve, and so you need to be in a very trust environment with and relationship with your investors. And that's true that we see more and more entrepreneurs are looking for individual investors, ultra high net worth investors, or family office. We have already an entrepreneurial background because they have the same mindset, and they can share a lot, and they can share the same value. It's very important to be aligned with your personal values as well.
And I'm afraid that's all we have time for on this week's special edition of The Entrepreneurs in Paris. Thanks very much to Jade Francine, Antoine Basquiera, and Aurélien Drin for joining us. Thanks also to Studio Scopitone in Paris for hosting the discussion. The September issue of Monocle magazine, which features a guide to building better businesses and an excerpt of this conversation, is out now. Pick up your copy today or subscribe at monocle.com/subscribe. All that's left for me to do is to thank Daniel Bache, who produced this show, and Kieran Matthew Banerjee, who edited it. I'm Matt Alagaya. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.
At HSBC Private Banking, we know your journey as an entrepreneur will be as unique as the business you run. From growing your company to helping shape longer-term goals, our unrivaled team of experts is here to support you and your family every step of the way. HSBC Private Bank, supporting entrepreneurial spirit.